You're listening to the Maryland Baseball Network Podcast. Here are your hosts, Nathan Schwartz and Jack Suzanin.
Welcome to the 2024 season preview on the Maryland Baseball Network Podcast. I'm Nathan Schwartz, joined by my co-director of broadcasting, Jack Suzanin. Jack, it's good to be in the booth for the first time. It's the first time we're anchoring this podcast together, and a lot of excitement around the team this year.
Yeah, you and I really have been talking for a couple weeks, even a couple months, almost ever since that final out against, or that walk-off against George Mason, or against us, that George Mason hit. We've been looking forward to this year. It's obviously been a wild offseason in Maryland baseball, a lot to talk about, but yeah, we're just excited for the season.
We couldn't be more excited. It starts on Friday night, 6:30 p.m. at Georgia Southern. I will be in Statesboro for that series. But before we can talk about the 2024 season as a whole, we got to focus on what Maryland did in 2023, winning the Big Ten regular season title, winning the Big Ten tournament, then getting that rough selection to go to number one overall, Wake Forest, and then losing in that Winston-Salem regional. Then Rob Vaughn goes and becomes the head man at Alabama, takes Anthony Papio, Mike Morrison, and Ian Petrutz with him, and then seven guys from that team last year get drafted, Matt Shaw, Nick LaRusso, the highlights. How does Matt Swope go forward with this team, knowing that not only do two assistants leave, Ian Petrutz leaves, but all that draft talent as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to look at it also in a positive way. I mean, seven guys drafted, that's almost unheard of for a program like Maryland, if you think about it. And, you know, you can recruit with that. You can say, hey, look at Matt Shaw, a guy who coming out of high school, his only two offers were Maryland and Northeastern. That's it. Then he became the 13th pick in the draft, signed a $5 million plus signing bonus.
Top 100 prospect.
Yeah, right now. Going to Major League spring training probably as we speak. So I think you can show that as an example, and it's really helped recruiting, seeing all these guys go on to the next level, even the guys like Lamont Wade or Brandon Lau, guys like that who are at the next level now. It's helped, and this freshman class, which we'll touch on later, is really the start of that, seeing what this program can become recruiting-wise.
Yeah, even look at a guy like Tommy Kane, who was drafted late, only spent 1 year at Maryland, didn't get a whole lot of time, but the abilities that he gained at Maryland and with this coaching staff helped him become a Major League Baseball player. And you also look at David Falco, goes to Wake Forest. That's a big loss, but that was kind of expected with the grad transfer. Bobby Zmarzlak, another grad transfer, goes to Georgia Tech. This is a team that loses its top five bats in the lineup from last season. It's going to look completely different, Jack. The power isn't going to be there, but I don't see this lineup skipping a beat in 24.
No, obviously, we can't say this lineup's as talented as last year's, because it's not. I mean, obviously, it's a new team. Matt Shaw, Nick LaRusso, Luke Schlieger, Ian Petrutz, those guys were all major, major parts of this lineup. But this lineup, as you said, not going to skip a beat. The transfers they brought in, the freshman class is the best freshman class I've seen at Maryland in my short time here. It's going to be a fun year and a fun couple of years for Maryland baseball, just because they lose Matt Shaw, they lose Jason Savickul, they lose all these guys. It's, you know, doom and gloom. We won't get to see those guys wear the Maryland red anymore. It's still going to be a fun season. It's still going to be a very fun season, a very fun team.
Excitement is just the word, right, that we keep talking about. There's so much to look forward to with this group, whether it's the transfers, whether it's Kevin Keister and Elijah Lambros, Eddie Akopian, and those guys coming back in this freshman class that we keep saying we're going to dive into it. I'm telling you, you're going to want to wait, because these, especially the three position players that we're going to talk about, are going to be huge for Maryland down the line. But none of this would be possible without Matt Swope staying. Spent years with the program, four as a player, becomes the director of operations in 13, and then becomes an assistant coach, becomes the associate head coach, and now is taking over his first season, and there's no better guy for the job.
You're absolutely right. I'm taking a coaching class this semester, and one of my worksheets the other day asked me, who's the happiest coach you know? And it was a no-brainer. It's Matt Swope. This guy bleeds Maryland. It's his dream job. He's talked about many times how this isn't a stepping stone job for him. This is where he wants to be, and he's proven that. You know, he could have gone other places to be the hitting coach. He probably could have gone to the professional level to be a hitting coach, but he wants to be at Maryland. He wants to lead this program and make this program the best it can be, and he really has done a good job of making the program the best it can be for this year. And it certainly helps bring a couple Maryland guys home to be the assistant coaches on the staff, doesn't it, Nate?
Yeah, absolutely. Jimmy Jackson comes in from James Madison, where he was for the better part of a decade. He will be the pitching coach. And Johnny Poss comes from Wilson College, a program that's Division III. He built that program from the ground up, Maryland guy through and through, and now he comes home. And those are going to be the two veteran assistants on the staff. Tommy Gardner goes from the director of player development to an assistant. Nick Robinson goes from a grad assistant to that director of player development slot. It's a really good-looking coaching staff. And just being around the team in the fall and earlier in the team in the season, all the guys are bought in, and this coaching staff is a big reason why.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you lose Mike Morrison, you lose Anthony Papio off that coaching staff, and obviously Rob Vaughn you lose as well, but again, this coaching staff is just so excited to be at Maryland. Obviously, we know there was a lot of criticism about the pitching staff, and led by Mike Morrison, is Mike Morrison the right guy for the job? Obviously, the players loved working under Mo. We absolutely know that, but working under JJ, they all the pitchers we've talked to and the people around the program that we've talked to say that JJ's done wonders for some of these guys.
Yeah, it's more so the technique and the process behind what each pitcher is doing. And the big thing we've gathered from Coach Swope and talking with him and what he's told other people he's done interviews with is he coaches to the individual. And that's a big part of why this program has been so successful and why it's going to continue being successful, is because it's not an overarching theme of you have to play into my way of and our way of baseball. It's a buy-in method. You buy into the overarching culture of the program, and then the coaching staff works with each individual with the motor preferences to then allow the player to become the best they can be. And I think that's why Coach Jackson and Coach Poss were drawn to this program, why so many people want to come to Maryland, is because of this culture that has been sustained and will be sustained not only this year but in the years to come with Coach Swope.
Yeah, and it shows a guy like Tommy Gardner, who's now an assistant coach full-time instead of being the director of player development, which it was last year. He's just stuck around Maryland. You know, he came to Maryland as a freshman, played 4 years here, and is still here and is ready to help lead this program. It shows the culture that Maryland's trying to build, that this is home for a lot of these guys. And it's, again, it's that individualized focus, but it comes together to make such a beautiful product.
And not only is it an individualized focus, Coach Swope has wanted to make one thing very clear when he's been talking to the media so far ahead of the season opener. This is not a rebuild. This is not completely building from the ground up. This is a revamp. This is, you lose a bunch of guys to the portal. You lose a bunch of coaches. You now have to build through the high school guys through the transfer portal. And it's about that culture. They're going to continue to win. They're not going to cave in and say, oh, we won the Big Ten tournament last year, we won the Big Ten championship, we are just not gonna try and fight for the number one spot. This is a group that expects to win. They expect to be in a regional, and that's the precedent that's been set over the last 2 years.
Yeah, it really has been, and Swope is just continuing that again. Like he said, and like you just said, this is not a rebuild. They're just reloading. You know, that's college sports. You're gonna lose guys. It's not a permanent process. But the fact that you can reload through the portal, through the freshman class that they got, through the guys that you're bringing back to be your leaders, it's just so huge to have that buy-in and that mentality to win from so many guys playing for the program, involved with the program. It's going to be an exciting year for Maryland, and we'll touch on the transfers again and the freshmen. You'll want to wait for it. It's really exciting is what it is.
Excitement, excitement, excitement.
We can't stop saying it.
We can't stop saying it, but that's really what it is. It's an unexpected year. Who knows what's going to happen with this group, but there's a lot of hope and a lot of reasons to believe why this group can make it to a third consecutive NCAA regional. So while we talk about the excitement around this group, let's look at the schedule. So starts this weekend, Friday night at Georgia Southern. That's a team picked middle of the belt in the Sun Belt to begin the season, a team that is very similar to Maryland schedule-wise, but just the recent success of the team. Both teams hosted regionals for the first time in 2022. Last year, Maryland took a step forward. Last year, Georgia Southern takes a step back. That should be a good way to start the series. And then, Jack, you'll be in Corpus Christi for the opening season tournament, where Maryland will play Corpus Christi, Pitt, and Washington.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting start to the year. I know many Terps fans are disappointed with some of the scheduling, and they tried to schedule as tough as they can. There were a couple series that fell through. Coach Swope said during media day they were scheduled to play Miami and TCU. Both of those series have unfortunately fallen through.
Both would have been fantastic series, not only for the RPI, but just for three really good baseball teams being able to play one another.
Yeah, it would have been fun for sure, but they do still have a very good schedule. Georgia Southern's a team that's sort of in a similar spot to Maryland. Right. They're sort of in that reloading phase, and I think it'll be an interesting series. Again, both regional hosts 2 years ago. Georgia Southern, like you said, took a step back. Maryland takes that step forward, but they're going to be a team that's going to be a tough test for Maryland, but one where you think, okay, we can definitely go down and get a road series win. And then the Corpus Christi tournament's interesting. Obviously, three different teams, all really in different phases of their conference. Corpus Christi picked middle of the Southlander show. They're the host of the tournament. It's going to be a really fun weekend at Whataburger Field in Corpus Christi, Texas.
How about that? I know you're excited to meet the mascot.
Yeah, Izzy the Islander. I ran into Izzy at March Madness last year because, if you remember, Maryland was in the Birmingham sort of sub-region.
That's right,
And Texas A&M Corpus Christi played against Alabama in the first round, and it didn't go well for them.
No.
But that's okay.
Didn't go well for Maryland either.
Didn't go well. That's a different sport, different topic, different day. But yeah, Izzy the Islander. Can't wait to reconnect with my good friend Izzy. But also Pitt and Washington. They're again two different teams. Washington regional team last year, and Pitt's a team. They're picked to finish closer to the bottom of the ACC, but the ACC this year, it just feels like it's more loaded than ever. Obviously, Wake Forest at the top. I don't see a situation where they don't win the College World Series with the pitching and the hitting they have, bringing back Nick Kurtz, bringing in Chase Burns. I mean, are you kidding me? But again, Pitt's going to be a really tough test. Former Reds catcher Devin Mesoraco on that staff.
Man, that's a name I've heard in a while.
You and I are both big, just thrown out guys of just random, you know.
Big immaculate grid guys.
Big immaculate grid guys. And Devin Mesoraco certainly fits the build of just a random guy. But that's going to be certainly a fun game. And then the Washington game is probably the best team Maryland will see in that series. Going to be, obviously, an opponent in conference next year. Obviously, don't know if we're going to be playing them, but a Big Ten team next year that Maryland will certainly have to get used to, and a team that's going to be really good again, finish near the top of the Pac-12. So it'll be a fun first couple weekends for Maryland.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that Washington game, and that honestly might be the highest-ranked non-conference game that Maryland has. They have two at Boston College, the second to last weekend of the season. Just a two-game set Saturday and Sunday. That'll be a good RPI booster for Maryland late in the season if both teams are in that bubble of hosting a regional, making the tournament area. But I'll just rattle off the rest of the series. Bryant is the first home series. The Matt Woods Darby, former Bryant Bulldog, transferred to Maryland, and now he is an alum of both of the programs. So
he's doing good work with Motor Preferences.
Absolutely.
Swope said he'll be down for that series. Yeah. So if you want to catch up with Woodsy, he'll be there.
And then Charlotte is the following week in Charlotte, North Carolina. Portland, Oregon. University of Portland is the week after that. A bit of a long road stretch there before coming back and playing the conference series opener at home versus Michigan State. That's going to be a really fun series. And then I think the biggest series of the year for Maryland is going to come that last week of March at Michigan. That's a team that has performed really well over the last 2 years, a team Maryland had some success against 2 years ago. They didn't match up last year, but it being on the road, Michigan is probably going to be a top three or four team in the conference. That's a series, a big three games for Maryland to where they can make that first statement and say, we're not going anywhere. We are still the team to beat in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, the Big Ten this year is so interesting because I think everyone will agree that Indiana, Iowa, whatever order you want to put them in, are the top two teams.
Right.
After 100%
agree.
After that, it sort of becomes a mess. And that's not saying Maryland can't win the Big Ten. They are more than capable of winning the title. It's just, it's a whole mess of teams. Maryland, Michigan, Rutgers, they're all going to be good. We don't know how good Nebraska, obviously, even though they lose Bryce Matthews, Max Anderson, they still are going to be a good team. And Maryland going there may be their toughest road conference series, but of course they also have to go to Rutgers, who's going to be really good. We don't know how good Penn State's going to be under year one of Mike Gambino, so it's just going to be a really interesting year in the Big Ten.
Absolutely. And so after that Michigan series, you host Indiana. So two crucial back-to-back Big Ten series. Then you go to Northwestern. That's a rebuilding team. Lost a lot of players. Only won 10 games last year. Alex Colarco, transfer from Northwestern, will go back to Evanston and face the Wildcats.
That's then, a series that if Maryland's going to want to sweep that one. Yeah, that's where you build up your wins.
That is a must sweep for Maryland. And then you go to Nebraska, as Jack just mentioned, host Illinois. I believe that Friday night game is going to be on Big Ten Network. That'll be fun. And then at Rutgers, then the Boston College series, and then you close the year. Finally, we haven't had a final series at home since we've been here. So the final three games for Maryland, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, in middle of May, they will host Penn State. And then hopefully they make the top eight and get into the Big Ten tournament in Omaha.
Yeah, you would think they would be in the top eight, although crazier things have happened. But yeah, it's a really fun Big Ten schedule. I think the main thing is you avoid Iowa. Iowa is...
Yeah, that's big.
They're going to be a really, really good team this year. Obviously, you have Brody Brecht, who's a year older, even though Maryland beat him last year, which was probably the best game, just entertainment quality-wise, that I've ever seen from Maryland here. Obviously, the perfect game, that's a different story. We're gonna put that in a special category.
That Friday night at Ole Miss last year,
that was a good one,
something
too.
Special, with Ian hitting the grand slam, Jason going seven innings, shutting down the number four team in the country on their home turf. That was really special one to be at.
But I think the Friday Iowa game was really a representation of this Maryland team last year. I mean, just they got punched in the mouth early in that game. I think they were down 5-0 at the end of the first inning. Still found a way to win that game when they were facing off against Brody Brecht, one of the top arms in the country, throwing 104 mile an hour. I know Steven Schock, we got to give him a shout out, tweeted that video of the 104 mile an hour fastball to Kevin Keister. And a lot of Maryland players and coaches were vocal about the fact that was not a strike on Twitter this week.
It wasn't. It definitely wasn't.
I'm not going to lie to you. I was in the booth, and I could barely see it. It was thrown so hard. So
I'm glad Kevin stood up for himself.
He did.
Eddie was in there, a bunch of the players. Swope was in there. A bunch of guys on social media were backing Kevin on that. Objectively, it was not a strike. It was as clear of a ball as you can get.
But then Matt Shaw hit a ball 507 feet to get the revenge there. So it works. Maryland won that series. Probably should have swept that series, that Sunday game. They just sort of lost in the annoying way. But they won that series.
It's okay. They made up for it by winning the championship.
They did. They won. So the 3-1, they'll take that advantage any day of the week. But again, Iowa's going to be really good this year. They bring... not everybody back. They lose Keaton Anthony, Brennan DeRiggie, obviously Sam Honar they lose to Maryland, but they bring a lot of talent back, and they're going to pitch, they're going to hit, they're going to do a lot of things. They're going to be scary for Big Ten opposition, so Maryland is certainly happy to avoid them.
No doubt about it. I'm sure that those two teams will match up in the conference tournament in Omaha. So we've looked over what they lost. Swope being the head coach, what the schedule's going to look like. Now, who's coming back for Maryland? Because it's not a lot of guys. But when you look at the pitching staff in particular, Kenny Lippman is the guy that is going to highlight the pitching staff. He's stepping into this Friday night role. He was an All-American at Denison in 2022, first team All-Conference. He made 8 starts, had a sub-2 ERA, moves to the bullpen with Maryland last year, has a middle-of-the-pack in the 4-4 ERA range. Now, a big jump for Kenny going from that 8th-inning guy to Friday nights.
Yeah, and it is going to be a big jump, but he has worked a lot this offseason to get better. He's worked a lot with JJ, as we mentioned. Jimmy Jackson has helped a lot with his pitching staff, and Kenny Lippman's going to be a prime example. We got to look at Kenny in an inter-squad scrimmage a couple days ago, and he looks fantastic. His slider looks as good as ever. You know, he's not going to be a fastball dominant guy. He's not going to be in the upper 90s, but his fastball's still good. His slider is still his best pitch. He's now developed a splitter and a curveball. He's not using the curveball as much, but the splitter is going to be his other go-to pitch in addition to the fastball and the slider that he'll use. So the question I think for me, for Kenny, is how long is he going to be able to go into games? Because the scrimmage we saw him, he was the 4 to 5 inning range. He looked pretty good. He only gave up one run. It's just going to be interesting to see, you know, how long are they going to be able to take him? Because the bullpen, again, is, I don't want to say shaky, but it's a question mark because it's, again, a ton of new guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to see that splitter. We saw it a little bit in the inner squads over the past couple months, but now being able to see it against other teams and see how that pitch has really grown, the change in the arm slot, it was really a natural movement working with Coach Jackson to go from that sidewinder motion to now coming more over the top. I really think that's going to help him not only preserve his arm, but get a little bit more velocity, maybe a mile or two added onto that fastball. We'll be in Georgia this weekend, so maybe he gets a little extra gas on the fastball with the heat. And then you look at not only Kenny comes back, Ryan Van Buren, we expect to stay in that midweek starter, and then Nate Haberthier is going to play some big innings in the back end of the bullpen.
Yeah, and Van Buren, they're hoping, is going to be that go-to midweek guy. Maryland hasn't really had a go-to guy on the midweeks. It was Logan Ott a couple years ago. Then last year, it just sort of rotated between Ott, between Van Buren, between Johnson, just a ton of different guys. McCoy got a couple midweek starts before he slotted in that Sunday role. Then Haberthier got a couple starts. So they're hoping Van Buren can be that guy to take the midweek role and make it his. And it's proven over the course of the last couple years how important these midweek games are. Through RPI and whatever, and Maryland's not going to have the opportunities as much in the Big Ten to boost their RPI as they would in another conference. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting in these midweeks. Van Buren is a guy who definitely has the stuff. I mean, he started the Big Ten title game last year, and he did the job. You know, obviously it wasn't the best outing ever, but he did the job. He got a lot of hard contact, but you know, if he's getting outs, that's going to be huge for Maryland. And then a guy like Nate Haberthier, who's not going to be a starter this year, which is a different mindset than he was going into last year. Last year, he's going in saying, you know, I'm going to be the Sunday guy, and then things didn't go as well for him in that Sunday role. But this year, he's going to pitch some serious innings in the bullpen. He's lost about 15 pounds, and he's looking pretty good.
He is looking good. He's got that confidence back that was there at the beginning of last season and then just slowly faded outing after outing. I mean, really excited to see him come into a bigger role. And now let's go back to the hitters that are returning for Maryland, highlighted by the big three of Kevin Keister, now wearing number 3 for Maryland and moving to shortstop, filling in for Matt Shaw. Elijah Lambros returns in center field, and Eddie Akopian probably going to play a majority first base, but Dirt fans, I'm telling you, he is going to move around a little bit. Expect to see him at second base on occasion, maybe third base every once in a while, and in the corner outfield spots.
Well, we saw him play shortstop in the scrimmage, and he was really good over there. He you know, he has a strong arm. Obviously, he's not going to take Keister's role unless Keister's, you know, out injured for whatever reason. But he looked pretty good at that shortstop role, and with the options that Maryland has at first, you know, throwing an Alex Colarco there until he's ready to catch, I think it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, I think he'll start the year mostly at first with Colarco being the DH. But yeah, he can play a ton of different positions. You got to remember, he didn't come to Maryland to be a first baseman. That role was Ian Petrutz's last year, and Eddie came in and he was sort of told, hey, first is where you're going to have the most opportunity to play. And he went and put on a first baseman's glove and took it.
And here we are.
Yep, and here we are now debating whether he's going to go back to a position he grew up playing or if he's going to stick at first.
Yeah, all three of those guys are going to be middle of the bat guys. We expect Kevin and Elijah to be at the top of the lineup. Eddie probably slots into that 5 or 6 spot. And then another guy who's coming back who flew under the radar last year, didn't get a lot of opportunities, but hit the ball really well when he got into the batter's box, is Devin Russell. And with talking with the coaching staff, they've said he had one of the best falls they've ever seen, and he's just a sophomore.
Yeah, I want to say the number was like 10 or 11
jacks over the fall.
10 or 11 homers in the fall, which is, I think Swope used this word, unbelievable. I mean, this is going to be, if you're looking for the breakout guy for this year for Maryland, it's going to be Devin Russell. This guy may not hit 300 or whatever. He's going to hit, I would say, at least like 12 to 13 homers if things go according to plan for him. You know, this guy is ridiculous power. Did not get a ton of time last year, but when he did get time, he looked good. He hit that homer against UMBC, and is going to be, you know, playing a lot bigger role this year. That catcher role was sort of a question mark. Not a question mark. It was sort of, oh my gosh, what are we going to do at catcher? We don't have anyone to replace Schlicker, but they got Charlie Glennon from Denison, who is one of the greatest D3 players in recent memory.
Great resume.
And obviously you have Alex Calarco coming in. He's not going to be able to catch right away because of his labrum surgery. His recovery went faster than anticipated. He's going to be able to play catcher this year. But Devin Russell was sort of just there and really earned that spot in the fall. And you don't really see that as much in college athletics with the portal now, but Russell really took over that spot in the fall and made sure that it was going to be him. No one was going to take that job from him. And he's probably going to put Glennon on the bench, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to have depth with a team like this and so many guys that could just slide into that DH spot. They're really going to be able to ride the hot bat, whether it's Calarco, whether it's Ben Nardi coming in, another transfer that we'll talk about. Glennon could slide in. He could also catch late in the game. There's always that insurance you need for an injury. I feel like the last couple years that we've been following the team, the depth has only been so much. You had maybe one or two guys that could pop into the lineup and play every day, and you only had the three starters and then maybe four or five relievers. This year it's a completely different story, much deeper on both the hitting and the pitching side, and that's a big part due to these veteran transfers coming in, highlighted by Alex Calarco, Sam Honar, and Ben Nardi on the hitting side.
Yeah, and these three are going to mash for Maryland. Even though they may not all start, like Nardi may not start right away, but we saw him again in the inner squad. He absolutely belted a home run and was
105 off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely smoking the ball. If you follow Maryland Baseball Analytics on Twitter, you'll see Ben Nardi's name up at the top there when it comes to exit velo. The dude can just hit. He's the all-time leader in home runs at Catholic University. Comes here to Maryland and expect him to hit a couple more homers. But you also see the other transfers. Alex Calarco is the tallest catcher I've ever seen. He's probably
6'5", yeah. 235.
And yeah, he's huge. And that size and strength translates to hitting the ball really far, and he can do that.
And he's somebody that has experience in the Big Ten, comes over from Northwestern, had 14 multi-hit games last season before having shoulder surgery, and towards the end of the season with that torn labrum. Yeah. Played some corner infield at Northwestern, but he's going to play first base and catcher for Maryland. And yeah, you might remember his brother, Anthony, played at both Northwestern, was a part of that perfect game for Ryan Ramsey, mm-hmm. and he played for Ole Miss last year. He had a game-winning home run off of Maryland in that Saturday game, I believe,
yeah,
in Oxford. And so expect Alex to slot into middle of the lineup, four or five spot. And then you look at a guy like Sam Honar, who another guy that has experience in the conference, played for Iowa the last couple years and started in that Big Ten tournament championship game against Maryland, gave Matt Swope a good first impression.
Yeah, and Iowa fans were not happy when he left, especially to a conference rival, because he was a very important part to that Iowa team. He actually hit a homer off of Maryland in, I believe, the Sunday game. I think he hit it off of Nate Haberthier. I'm not 100% positive about that, but I think in the Sunday game, he hit that home run and was a huge part of that Iowa team, and he comes over to Matt Swope, and another guy Swope has worked his motor preferences magic with, and expecting to have a big year both at the dish and in the field. Should be that second baseman for most of the year.
Yeah, he's an experienced guy, to say the least. Yeah,
at three different schools.
At the collegiate level, no doubt about it.
Former Saluki.
Exactly. This will be his fifth year of college baseball, career 288 hitter. He's only got 19 homers to his name over those four previous seasons. 10 of those came last year with the Hawkeyes, and we're expecting another double-digit homer campaign for him in 2024. So now the mystery. Will it be solved? Can Maryland figure it out on the pitching side? And I think there's not going to be that ace right off the bat. We think Kenny's going to slide into that Friday spot and thrive. But The other two starters have been a mystery, and it's still not confirmed who's going to be the Saturday and the Sunday guy, but we've got a pretty good idea. George Washington transfer Logan Koster is going to start on Saturdays, and Heartland Community College transfer JUCO guy Meade Johnson, the junior, is going to start on Sundays. At least to start the season.
Yeah, that's what we think. Not 100% confirmed, obviously, until the lineup card comes out, but that's the vibe we've been getting over the last couple of weeks. And when we were first told that Meade Johnson has a really good shot to be the Sunday guy, we were shocked. But he might have the best stuff out of this pitching staff. You know, he's throwing mid-90s, had a really, really solid couple of years at Heartland Community College, I believe, helped them win a championship.
Yeah, he won a JUCO title last year.
I think he started the championship game.
Yeah, he went out of five innings, had 11 strikeouts against Southeastern Community College, and he's a guy that can go deep into the game. He's got seven innings as his career high. He's made 20 starts over the last two seasons. All of his appearances last year were starts, had an ERA in the mid-fives through about 68 innings or so. And his strikeout numbers are ridiculous. Yeah. He had 100 strikeouts in 68 and two-thirds innings last season.
So I think it was our good friend Sam Jane put out on Twitter and was asking Michael House a couple questions about if anyone's going to step up to be the ace of the staff. Obviously, Kenny's going to be the Friday night guy. I think I responded to that tweet when he was asking is there going to be an ace? I said yes, but not who you think it is. Meade Johnson's who I think it's going to be. I think he's got a really, really good chance to step up, do some serious damage. Those strikeout numbers are going to translate. If you got the stuff to strike out 11 guys in a championship game, that's going to translate wherever you go,
Doesn't matter what level. If you have the stuff, it's going to play, yeah, especially at the Big Ten and at the Bob. But you look at a guy, Logan Koster, this has been one guy that's going to go deep into the game, right?
Yeah.
He had eight innings three times last season, topped the A-10 in innings pitched last season. He led George Washington in wins, was second on the team in strikeouts, and his ERA floats in that mid-4 range, 4.6, 4.7. Another guy, though, he's had plenty of starting experience, 21 starts in 29 total appearances. He's pitched 145 innings of collegiate baseball, and he's going to slot into that Saturday spot, and I think he's going to excel, especially at the jump.
Yeah, I agree. Again, you're looking for guys from Maryland when the bullpen's, you know, again, a bit of a question mark. You're looking for guys that are going to go deep into games, and Koster's going to be one of those guys who's going to, you know, do some damage, you know, save the bullpen a little bit if Lippman on Friday is not able to go for those 7-8 innings, which I don't think anyone's expecting him to be able to do right off the bat. And that's not to say, you know, we expect Koster to go 8 innings or we expect Johnson to go 8 innings, you know, right off the bat. You know, that's pretty unrealistic for the start of the season. Obviously, if they can, that would be amazing.
Of course.
But, you know, you're hoping for that reliability from a guy like Logan Koster. He's not going to be, you know, a Cy Young winning Big Ten Pitcher of the Year type of guy, but he's going to be reliable. He's going to get the job done.
No doubt about that. And so that's what the rotation is going to look like, what we think at least. But there's a couple of guys that could easily slot in to that Sunday or Saturday spot if Koster and Johnson don't perform well off the jump. Looking at Logan Barrier, transfer from Longwood. He was their Friday night guy last year. Garrett French is not a likely candidate to start, but he's expected to have a lot of opportunity late in games. There's not going to be a designated closer. We know that already. It's just going to be a closer by committee, whoever's A, available that day, and then B, pitching well later in the game. And Omar Melendez comes over from Alabama State.
Yep.
And was phenomenal last year. Doesn't have the most velocity for somebody his size, but has some good pitches, and he could see a couple of long relief outings.
Yeah, his changeup is the big moneymaker for him. Again, his fastball, it's probably the most confusing thing I've ever seen, that a guy who was, what, 12-0, 13-0, something like that last year, was able to do that with fastball topping out at like 87. But Melendez, again, it's his changeup, it's his off-speed stuff. That's really going to do some damage against these teams. They're hoping they can get that velo up, obviously. But this is a guy who's a really high potential guy. He's not going to start right away for Maryland. But again, if he can, you know, make the improvements that he needs to, there's no reason to think. Obviously, this was a guy, when you look at his stats, you're like, oh my goodness, this is going to be the Friday night guy. But, you know, they don't want to rush him into that role. Obviously, the SWAC is a much different level than the Big Ten. So it's going to be interesting to see how Melendez's game transfers.
Yeah, the Puerto Rico native had a 12-0 record last year, 2.52 ERA, 93 innings pitched, struck out 96 guys, and started all but one game in his appearances last year.
Yeah, and he was a USA Baseball guy this summer. And that's obviously a big accomplishment. So there is talent there. There's no denying that there is talent there. It's just a matter of, you know, how's it going to translate? And to be quite honest, we don't know. What we are excited for as far as Melendez is those between inning tags we have. We finally have a Spanish one.
Finally.
Omar Melendez is helping us out there big time. He gave us the Spanish tag, which you'll hear if you listen to Nate in Georgia Southern.
Yeah, I believe I made it the third bullpen tag, so three pitching changes, and we will hear Mr. Melendez in Espanol. We also are not going to dive into Tristan Sarcone a whole lot, but he could be a guy that looking late inning, eighth inning, ninth inning guy, the transfer from Dartmouth, was co-captain in the Ivy League last year. He's made another guy that's made a lot of starts, but probably won't start right away.
He was an interesting guy because he was so good in 2022. He was, I believe, second team all Ivy. And then last year, for whatever reason, his numbers just took a massive slip. And no one really could figure out why, but hopefully Maryland can figure out why and return him to that level where he was at that third year at Dartmouth.
All right. We've talked about the transfers that we want to highlight. Now, we've been waiting all show to talk about these guys. The coveted freshman class, the class of 2023 for Matt Swope and company. And it's five guys that we're going to talk about, three on the hitting side, two on the pitching side. Let's start with the pitchers. We were just talking about the pitchers. Duke McCarron, Joey McManus. We don't know a whole lot about them, but we know they've got wicked stuff, and they could see opportunity quicker than we think.
Yeah, and I mean, look at last year, freshman pitching-wise. Kyle McCoy was not expected to have a huge role coming in, but lo and behold, he became the Sunday starter after some really good outings in the midweeks, and I think that's where you're going to see guys like McCarron and McManus, you know, really start to get outings as in the midweeks. Obviously, we could definitely see them on the weekends. There's no doubt about that. It's just a matter of how they want to use them. They probably don't want to develop them into relievers too quickly, because I think these are guys they think can start for them long term, maybe not right away, but it's going to be interesting to see how they use them this year.
Yeah, so a little bit about McCarron. He's ranked as the number 8th player in New Jersey by Perfect Game, number 4 right-handed pitcher, both these guys throwing from the right side. And McManus is a physical freak, very similar to Alex Colarco, 6'5", 230. He's from Maryland, Emmitsburg. He actually was one game away from playing in the Little League World Series way back when. He played against my brother.
Really?
In that trip to Bristol, Connecticut, and on that Little League World Series run. So a little fun tidbit about Joey. But I would expect those guys to maybe get some opportunities in the midweeks. Mount St. Mary's is the first one on tap on Tuesday. So maybe we'll see a couple of those guys in the middle innings, especially if Van Buren only gives you 3 or 4, and you have to rely on 2 or 3 guys to get you through the rest of the game. McManus and McCarron could be those guys in the first couple weeks.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's going to be, again, interesting to just see how they're used, whether they're given a long amount of time. And it's interesting because this year, as opposed to the last couple of years, Maryland really has options out of the bullpen. And we haven't really seen that a lot in our time. So it's just going to be interesting to see how they use them.
All right. Three batters that we are so excited to watch this weekend in Statesboro. We'll start with the younger brother of Eddie Akopian, Chris Akopian. He was committed to Wake Forest, flips his commitment to Maryland in June, and has a chance to be one of the best baseball players to come through this program in a long time.
He is the cream of the crop of these freshmen. Watching him play baseball, it's like he's playing a different sport. He's going to man third base this year, and he is an incredible fielder. There was a play he made. They were just doing a drill like last week, charged a ball and made the throw to first look just routine. And it's watching him at third is only the second most unbelievable thing I've seen him do, which is bat. If you can imagine the setup at the Bob, the varsity team house, deep left field, is a right-handed hitter. They were using their like curveball pitching machine thing, and for whatever reason they wanted to throw him hangers just to see how they could take advantage of it. Chris Hacopian hit the DirecTV dish on the varsity team house and knocked out TV service in the varsity team house. That's how hard he can hit the ball.
He can't make stuff like that up. He also hit the light pole out there in left center field. He looks like a linebacker.
Yeah.
It looks like Roquan Smith is going out there and in the batter's box. Like, yeah. He's got that size of Roquan Smith.
And the strength, too. I mean, he hit a ball, what was it, 105 off the end of the bat down the line for a double?
Yeah,
it's
his exit velocity is insane. His range in the field is insane. His poise in the batter's box. We haven't seen him take live ABs against anybody other than Maryland pitchers yet, but I don't think that's going to be an issue. He's going to be a 4 or 5 hitter guy in the lineup probably right away, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
He's got that much pop in his bat, good contact guy, and I'm really excited to see Chris, but I'm also excited to see the other two guys that are going to probably corner outfield spots. And that is Jordan Crossland and Braden Martin. Martin was, like Hacopian, was committed somewhere else, was committed to Florida State, similar timing to Hacopian, flips his commitment to Maryland. He's a second baseman by trade, but has gotten some work in the outfield and is probably going to be Maryland's go-to right fielder. And then Crossland, on the other hand, is a natural shortstop and is going to slide into left field with Kevin playing shortstop this year.
Yeah, and Martin's got a chance to lead off the lineup. This is the type of bat you're looking at with Braden Martin. Not going to hit a ton of homers, but this is a guy who just gets on base really fast.
Really quick.
His little brothers, he has two twin little brothers. Their names are Dash and Jet.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which
I didn't know that.
I think is the perfect analogy for what Braden is as a baseball player. Comes from a Maryland family. He's actually the nephew of Walt Williams.
Yep.
So this is going to be a guy that Maryland fans are going to love rooting for over the next couple of years. He's a fun player to watch.
He's your prototypical contact guy at the top of the lineup. He's not going to hit for power. He's going to split the gap. He's going to get a lot of hustle extra bases for sure. If he hits one on a low liner and it rolls all the way, he's going to be on third base.
Yep.
And he's thinking third base coming out of the box. Maybe could sneak one out every once in a
especially at the Bob. You never say never.
You never know. An inside the park home run candidate.
That would be a fun one.
That would be fun. I'm gonna say this right now. I think Braden Martin is going to hit an inside the park home run this year.
This year, that's your bold prediction.
That is my bold prediction for the 2024 season for Maryland baseball.
Braden, imagine if he leads off the game. I mean, we saw Luke Schlicker lead off however many games with home runs. I remember he did it in back-to-back games.
Yeah.
Against Iowa, and if Braden Martin leads it off with an inside the park homer, my goodness, the Bob would explode. Well, of course, he would do it on the road, but
right.
You get the point. But we can't forget about Jordan Crossland
and
how good he is. He's probably going to be the left fielder this year and another guy who can just mash.
Yeah, still learning that corner outfield spot, but we expect him to potentially fill in on the infield if there's an injury or somebody just needs a rest. But yeah, he's probably going to be one of your middle infielders for Maryland baseball in the next couple years. And we keep talking about him, but there's so much to be excited about. And all three of those guys are going to get opportunities to start right away. We're expecting all three of them to be on the lineup card in starting nine on Friday night in Statesboro. So,
which is crazy. Like, a guy like Jacob Orr is probably not going to be a starter because of how talented these guys are.
We've talked about Ben Nardi. He's probably going to be on the bench to begin the season. And just the overall cohesion of this group. They've never played in a regular season game together before. In the fall, when they played against Virginia and Georgetown, Eddie and Chris were both out with foot injuries. They both hit foul balls off the same foot and had the same exact injury. They were in boots. They didn't play a lot in the fall.
That is the most unbelievable thing I maybe have ever heard.
Such a quirky injury. I can't even like think about it without laughing, because it's like, of course they're it's all not good funny,
now.
But it's
they're all good now.
Yeah, and then Kolarko had the labrum recovery, so a lot.
Keister was banged up for a little bit of the fall.
Keister had an arm injury, whatever. You want to call fine. It. He's good. He's good to go.
Everyone, to our knowledge, he's good to go.
Yeah, so I mean, we saw Jordan Crossan in the infield in the fall, and now we're going to see him in the outfield in the spring. So a lot to look forward to, a lot to be excited about.
Yep, there it is. There's the excitement again. But last point on Crossan and Martin, Elijah Lambros talked to our media day about how he's, you know, really taken both of them under his wing, taught them the outfield. And I don't think there's a better guy on this Maryland team to teach you how to play outfield than Elijah Lambros.
There some certainly of the plays. Isn't.
That guy makes
you look back to the incredible. Iowa game you were there for, where he robbed the home run left center, and then the game at home against Nebraska where he did the same thing, pretty much the same spot on the field against, I don't even remember who it was against.
It was Nebraska.
I don't remember the guy that was hitting it.
Whoever.
It does not matter.
It does not. It wasn't going to be a homer. It's in the scorebook as an F8.
All right. So before Aaron Arnstein joins the podcast and gives us a in-depth interview with Matt Swope, and that'll finish out the podcast, we want to talk about the series ahead for Maryland against Georgia Southern. I'll be in Statesboro for that, and this is a really interesting series. We touched on it briefly earlier, but Georgia Southern, a team that really just wasn't the same last year as they were in the 2022 season, hosted a regional. They didn't make it out of their own regional, just like Maryland didn't make it out of its own regional. But there's also 23 newcomers on this Georgia Southern team, very similar to Maryland. I'm pretty sure it's 25 for Maryland, somewhere in that 25-30 range. But Georgia Southern took the step back last year. They finished with the losing record. They finished ninth in the conference, lost in the first round of the Sun Belt tournament, went 4-8 in the last 12 games of the year. They just didn't have a good finish to the season. Maryland, on the other hand, was on fire as the season came to a close, played really well in the Big Ten tournament, and then just got a really tough draw in the NCAA tournament. So I'm expecting this to be a back-and-forth series. I think Maryland can sweep, just based on looking at the pitching staff, the numbers, just doing the research on the guys. But there's two guys you should look out for in the Georgia Southern lineup. Number one is redshirt senior first baseman Sam Blancato. He was previously an outfielder, primarily moving to first base for the first time. He's hit 300 the last two seasons. He's not a big power guy, only 11 home runs over the last 2 years, but he's going to get on base. He's had a 421 on base last year, preseason all Sun Belt selection, had career highs in doubles, hits, RBIs, on base percentage, pretty much everything you can think of. And he's a switch hitter, so he's going to give this Maryland pitching staff a lot to think about. And then the other guy, probably the best player overall on this Georgia Southern roster, is Jarrett Brown, the senior third baseman, Georgia native. He was ranked as the number 24 third baseman in the country by D1 Baseball. Another guy that's preseason all Sun Belt, had 69 RBI last year, hit for .294 average, hit .305 the year before. Those are going to be two bats in that top four, at least of the lineup, that are going to contribute big. And then it's similar to Maryland, where we don't know exactly who's going to be the starting three for the Eagles, but if just based on the numbers and what I had to work with, I think Ty Fisher is going to be your Friday night guy. He's been the Friday night guy for the last two seasons, so expect that to stay the same. And then Mitchell Gross is a redshirt senior lefty from Gainesville. He started in the bullpen last year, moved to the rotation by the end of the season, led the team in ERA. And then Gavon Ray, another fifth-year guy, right-hander, another guy that started as a reliever, became a starter, had an ERA around 6, but a guy that does have a lot of experience, started his career at Tennessee, didn't play at all those first two seasons with the Vols, and then comes to Georgia Southern and has gotten a lot of experience over the last two seasons.
Yeah, and like you said, Maryland is in for a test. Obviously, this is a series that you would not expect to win. You hope to win, and, you know, there's the chance of sweeping, but this is going to be a tough road test for Maryland. It's going to be a good environment in Statesboro. I haven't checked the weather. You probably have checked the weather.
We're looking at mid-60s on Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday will be a little chillier, probably in the low 50s. But, well, we'll be fine. No rain, though, as of
that's
right
baseball
now.
Weather.
Knock on wood. Knock on wood.
I don't have any. There's wood on the podcasting lab key, so that's what Nate is knocking on
right
now.
Yeah, we got it.
I don't know if you can hear that. But yeah, no, it's going to be a fun series. And you know, I'm really excited for it.
I could not be more thrilled.
Excited. There it is again.
Thrilled. I keep trying to think of other words to say, but excited is really the theme of the preseason for Maryland baseball. Any record predictions, Jack, before we let Aaron dive into this interview?
I don't want to give a record prediction. I want to give a placement in the Big Ten prediction.
Sure.
I've got them finishing second.
Okay. I like that.
I think they're going to be ahead of one of Indiana or Iowa. I don't know which one. I think one of those teams is going to win the Big Ten. If I had to lean one way, I'd probably say Indiana.
Really?
I think I like their offense better than Iowa's. Not that Iowa's offense is bad. It's
no.
really good. I just think they lose a lot with Keaton Anthony, Brendan DeRiggie leaving. But Iowa's still going to be good. Hochstorf, Sam Peterson, Michael Seegers. They're still
the Seegers, yeah.
Your favorite name in the Big Ten, Raider Tello is back.
That's an all-time college baseball name. We got to dive into that one episode.
We will.
And just go all in on the best college baseball names.
But, yeah, no, I have them finishing second in the Big Ten, which I think would be a very good season, a very good rebuilding year, per se.
No doubt
Even though,
that.
Like we said, it's not a rebuild, it's a reload, it's a retool, whatever.
I think 30 to 35 wins is the expectation for this team, just based on the schedule. The Big Ten series streak that's been going, I unfortunately think that's going to come to a close at some point in the season. You look at that Michigan series on the road. We talked about it earlier. That's a really tough one. I got them finishing fourth in the Big Ten. I think Iowa's going to win the conference. I think they're going to win it by a couple games, actually. And I think Maryland not playing Iowa in the regular season hurts their chances of overtaking Iowa if they were to be in a close race towards the end. I think Indiana will finish second. And then we talked about that cluster of teams, right, that could be in that third, fourth, or fifth spot. I think Michigan winds up third with a 2-1 series win over Maryland. Maryland finishes fourth. And then any combination of Rutgers and Nebraska finishes 5-6.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair prediction. Again, it's such a cluster of Big Ten teams this year. Again, like we said at the beginning of the episode, it's Indiana and Iowa are your two, you know, probably your favorites heading into the year. But again, I don't think the Big Ten preseason poll has come out by the time of recording, which is unbelievable, the fact that the conference hasn't published that yet.
Really,
literally
really,
every other conference has.
Yeah.
But whatever, besides the point. Yeah, I think it's just going to be an interesting Big Ten season. A lot of teams could come up and win. A lot of unknown in the Big Ten, which is exciting.
A lot of unknown.
I said exciting again.
Dang it. A lot of unknown. A lot to build off of for this Maryland program. A lot to just be excited about. We're going to keep saying the excitement word because that's what it is. An exciting time, a new era for Maryland baseball, and the man leading that new era is Matt Swope. In his first season with Maryland, our broadcaster Aaron Arnstein was able to chat with Coach Swope for about 20 minutes and dive into a lot of the topics we talked about today, but you'll hear it from the head man himself. So here's Aaron with Coach Swope.
I am pumped to be joined by the Terps' very own head coach Matt Swope. Coach, thank you so much for hopping on. Really, really appreciate it. How have things been going for you the last couple of weeks?
Great. Well, it's good to have the guys back after the holidays. And it's been a little bit of break since the fall, so it's been nice to have them back on campus and just to kind of get going for some baseball and looking forward to this week finally actually getting to play an opponent instead of each other.
Exactly, and that was the first thing I was going to ask you. What's that excitement been? You know, you guys have been inter-squatting. You know, I saw during our men's lacrosse game, you guys are playing an inter-squad. What's it like to finally be facing a different opponent and not just be playing, you know, Maryland Terps versus Maryland Terps starting this weekend?
Yeah, I think the guys are just itching that, you know, they start to face the same pitchers and the pitchers are facing the same hitters and they kind of get to know each other a little bit over the past 6 months. So they're definitely just itching to kind of get out there and have the competition be versus someone else, and they're kind of coming together, and I think they're ready for that this week.
And there's been a few guys who have really made an impact starting back in the fall and throughout the offseason. And I know that really excites you and the rest of the team for the upcoming season. For Terp fans who don't know, who are some of the names that have caught your attention this offseason based on their on-the-field play?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I could single out probably a lot of guys, but it's just we got a completely new team, it seems. I think we have somewhere around 30 new players. You probably can correct me if I'm wrong, but 30 new players, right? I think at the beginning in the fall right now, we're just trying to gel and kind of come together as a unit. So the energy's been great. The unit's been great. It's just kind of seeing how guys fit into roles on the field. Definitely just some specific guys. You kind of know what you're getting in Sam Honar and Alex Kolarko, guys that hit in the middle of the lineup in the Big Ten. So I think what you're looking for is kind of assimilating those guys into the culture and how we play baseball at Maryland. And, you know, you add that in with the Kevin Keisters, the Lambroses, the Hedy Hakopian and Jacob Oren, the guys that have been back, that have had that experience on winning teams. And then you're looking for just like an influx of that young talent, okay, which freshmen are going to step up and make an impact. And it's very difficult at this level in that transition. So you're kind of looking for a few of those freshmen to step up, but then kind of have these mix of transfers that we have that are older on the hitting side. And then the pitching side, just kind of seeing like who takes advantage of their roles, right? We got a lot of grad transfers. You got a French, you got a Barrier, you got a Sarcone, you got a Melendez, you got a Mee Johnson, Logan Koster, all these guys that have had a ton of experience at other schools. But again, how does that assimilate into their staff? How do they kind of gel as a unit to move forward and kind of forge their path?
And you mentioned Kolarko and of course, being a veteran presence coming from Northwestern, as you mentioned, and I know you've really helped him with his swing and untapped some power there that wasn't necessarily shown before. What have you been working on with him for him to really take that next step and thrive with the Terps?
Yeah, all we're looking for is just trying to get them to be their best self. So what we do at Maryland is we just coach the individual. Everybody's different. We're trying to optimize the individual to get the best out of them on and off the field. And there were some things, there's no offense to the other programs, that they may have been trying to coach him or get him to do that just didn't fit what his body wanted to do. So we're actually changing baseball to them. We're not trying to fit everybody to do kind of the same thing. So we made some tweaks with Alex, and, you know, we'll see, you know, how that comes to fruition and how long that takes, because you got to remember he's been out since last season and he's just getting his first at bats in the past 2 weeks. So he's just now seeing live pitching. So I think he's someone that you'll continue to see get better as the season goes. But he has 3 home runs already in the preseason and inter squads. And then someone like Sam Honar, very similar. Maybe just a little bit of coaching tweaks that didn't quite fit for him at other places, even though he had a lot of success at times. And just trying to get them to understand what their body wants to do and how to play. And hopefully you just hope for the best. You just hope that, you know, you reach some untapped potential there, and it ends up changing the trajectory, the course of the whole team.
And of course, you mentioned Sam as well, nabbing him from Big Ten rival Iowa. And he's had a great offseason, I think 9 home runs during the fall. What can Terp fans expect from him?
He's just a great human. Just what a great person. What a great kid. Obviously, he's making his rounds as a famous country singer at Looney's once a week. But just a great human. You know, what we've tried to do at Maryland with this culture that's being built with John Sheff and Rob Vaughn, and I'm trying to continue that is get talented players, but really good people as well. So he fits the mold of that. It wasn't one of those situations where he had a bad experience at Iowa, or it was just, you know, he felt like through our relationship that maybe Maryland had something to offer in him from a development standpoint, and that, you know, he wanted to challenge himself and bet on himself for 1 year. So, you know, he's just such a great human, and just so thankful he chose us, and it's been great to coach him thus far. He's been battling a little bit of a back injury the past couple of weeks, so he's trying to fight through that. So hopefully he'll be healthy enough to start this weekend.
And you mentioned the culture as well, and trying to continue that from John Sheff, from of course former coach Rob Vaughn. What has that been like for you to kind of take on what they've done and really take it to the next level and then continue the success that this program's had the past couple of seasons?
Yeah, I'm super thankful for obviously John Sheff for hiring me and giving me an opportunity to come back. I was in my 30s then, so it was, you know, I wouldn't be here without him doing that. And then obviously what we built with him, and then Rob Vaughn, who's I was with all 11 years with John Schuff. So and built a extremely close bond, and I have a really, really strong relationship. So I use the word sustainability a lot. I'm not trying to revamp that, just because I was a big part of both of those, you know, cultures and teams in building this. So we're trying to keep more of a sustainability of success here. And I think that's kind of the goal right now. And when you're building culture, it just has to be authentic. A lot of the principles and the things and guidelines that we use and standards are still the same today. You just have to coach authentically. So whoever you are as a person, and how you want to get that message across, the kids can see right through it. So I think I've been fortunate enough to be around some great people, and just trying to put my little bit of taste on it and continue that success.
And going from some of the transfers to some of the guys who have been here at least a season or so, you previously said that you challenged Elijah Lambros and Kevin Keister to really be leaders this upcoming season. How have you seen them step into that leadership role?
Yeah, well, we're always going to be a player-led program, not a coach-led. So it's one of those things that we're trying to set them up for success. But, you know, how they transition into those leadership roles, how they handle success and failure, and then how they relay that to the rest of the team by upholding that standard that we have of excellence, is really up to them. You know, we'll put them in positions to be successful. We'll coach them hard. We'll give them all the resources, you know, in baseball and outside of that. But we want to be a player-led program. So if you're going to do that, how they come together and win and assimilate these new guys into that is we put a lot of responsibility on those guys.
And you tab Kevin Keister with that coveted number 3 jersey, of course, Luke Schwieger wearing in the past, a few other Terps who have had success beyond Maryland. What went into the decision to give Keister number 3? What were kind of some of the factors that went in for him to be the guy?
Yeah, well, he's been around it. You know, he's gone through, you know, he's been here the longest, but he's also gone through a lot of the transition. What I mean, from 21 was our first regional since 17. So he was part of the 21, 22, and 23 regional teams. Has maybe in his career where he didn't start out, maybe necessarily starting, you know, and going through that to where he's had a lot of success in the past 2 years. So I think he's seen it from beginning to the end. He's been through the gauntlet per se. And he's got that baseball IQ, and he's got the ability to lead. So it's interesting because, you know, we're probably a lot more alike than different, but we definitely early in our careers together butted heads a little bit. So it's been even more special for me to see how he's grown and how I've grown and how we've grown together, and kind of coming through with this common knowledge or bond together that, you know, we need each other. So it was just kind of a natural fit. I think he was someone that was always probably the front runner. And I think, you know, he takes a lot of pride in that. He loves Maryland, and he shows his emotions on his sleeve during the game. And he's just the perfect guy to kind of continue that lineage and that tradition of wearing number 3.
And then speaking about Elijah as well, he was really happy, of course, you know, with what you helped him with in terms of at the plate, you know, really making that next step. And he's looking to make another big step this upcoming season. What have you been working on with him? Just how have you seen him grow overall at the plate since he arrived here from South Carolina?
Yeah, obviously he had a good season last year, 14 home runs. I mean, I think anybody going from kind of the freshman season he had there and the ups and downs to 14 home runs and hitting almost 290 is exceptional. Is a great defender. So most of the stuff I talked to Elijah about, it isn't necessarily mechanical or swing stuff. It's more, what's the process of the at bat? What are you thinking about? What, you know, what are you overthinking on? So most of the stuff for him is more just taking those strides of being mentally prepared and not overthinking and certain things like that. So, looking for more of this season to kind of letting the game come to him per se, and letting those tools kind of show out and the hard work he's put in, as opposed to maybe overthinking it or you know, trying to fix every little tiny thing. So he's definitely one of those guys that wants to learn. He wants to be coached, but we got to have that good blend of just kind of giving that freedom to go out and react and play baseball as well.
And you talk about the mental side of things. How do you try to impart, you know, the importance of the mental side, and what are you teaching your guys in terms of to be mentally tough for big situations?
Yeah, I mean, it's the number one thing that we talk about on a daily basis is the process and mental toughness. Most people live in the past, or most people looking towards the future. Very rarely are people present. So We try to meditate every day for 3 minutes before we hit, before we get started for practice, and just trying to get them back in the moment, back in the present. And it's something that if I can keep them on the process, and the byproduct will be results and winning. So we try not to harp on too much of the results. We're just trying to stick to the process and taking care of our business and staying present day to day. And if their process is good and their mind frame is right, then the byproduct will be all the things that they want.
And we've talked about some of the key players going off to the coaching staff, of course, Coach Poss and then Coach Jackson as well. Of course, Coach Poss, you've known for a long time. What have they brought to this program? What have you seen from them in terms of the advancement that they're helping your players out with?
Yeah, just the total buy-in. You know, I think it's been great having Jimmy. You know, one of the things we talked about during the conversations, you know, before we hired him was the motor preferences stuff, which has been a big part of my transition in my life for the past 2 or 3 years, developing hitters and trying to incorporate it into the program and in the weight room and all those things. So he's completely bought in, dove in. I think it's made him a better coach on top of the things that he's already bringing with a wealth of experience and biomechanics and TrackMan data and all the rest of the stuff he's already really good at. And then, you know, just as a staff as a whole, being on the same page. That was the thing with Rob and Pappy. I was with them for pretty close to 11 years, and I don't have to say anything. We knew what we were going to say. We knew what we were going to do. We knew how we were going to prepare. And those types of things are invaluable. So we've tried to, from the day I got hired with the staff, is trying to make sure we can be as cohesive and on the same page as possible, because the only thing that really matters on a game day is how you're finding that niche to try to win. And that's something that we really had with other staff, so that we're striving to get to that point as fast as possible right now.
And as a team that's filled with mostly transfers, like we've talked about, you know, I gotta imagine that it wasn't easy to go out and assemble the roster that you guys have set, a pretty strong roster. What was that process like during the offseason, going out, making that recruiting pitch to guys looking to enter a program from other schools?
You know, I'm thankful Mike Morrison and Papio, you know, kind of helped me out with that stuff early on. And, you know, I think we were all didn't necessarily know what was going to happen around the regional, and it's tough, right? Rob's, you know, interviewing for jobs. You know, he may get some, he may not, he may pick some, he may not. And that's always tough, but you still have to prepare. So I was always mentally prepared over the past couple seasons when Rob was getting these opportunities, which he deserved, and to always think a step ahead. What if he does go, you know, how are we going to do things? So, you know, but I'm also thankful that when he did decide to go and he took Mo and Pap, that, you know, they helped me in those first 2 or 3 weeks to kind of solidify and try to do the best we could in the portal from this roster perspective then. So it's been a blend of, I'm thankful they kind of helped me through the transition. And then, you know, just a few other things from Jimmy and maybe Tommy, who was a holdover here, that we were able to do and kind of piece together this roster the best we could. And, you know, that's one good thing about the portal. We're never going to solely build this team around the portal. You know, our tradition has been more of development from the guys that we have. But at the same time, when you lose 7 guys to the draft and you do have graduation, you're going to have to utilize that the way you can. And what we tried to do from a pitching perspective was bring people in here that had experience, that have been kind of through the ringer a little bit, that weren't going to be wowed coming into the Big Ten or high level baseball. So I think we've done a good job of that, and kind of on the same way from the hitting side, bring some guys in with some experience. And like I said, just kind of see how this thing all comes together here this week.
And going from the transfers to some of the freshmen, you look at Jordan Crossland, Braden Martin, a few other big names. What has stood out to you about Crossland, Martin, and the freshman class in general, or in particular?
They're uber talented. There's no denying that. The Chris Akopian is just built different. There's no other word to say it. If you go look at him as a freshman, he's very imposing. He's also very confident and sure of himself. He comes from the great lineage of Derek Akopian and obviously Eddie. And then Braden Martin, it just kind of came together after his decommitment from FSU, where a local guy that was at St. John's that I know very well, and he's just been fantastic. And he's poised to have a huge impact on this lineup. You know, right now, maybe looking at more of like a leadoff guy. We'll see how that works out. And had a great preseason. He's going to be a pesky leadoff guy that just terrorizes Big Ten lineups for years to come. And then Jordan Crossland, who also looks like a baseball god. So super athletic, dynamic, can play infield, can play outfield. All three of these guys are going to be in the mix. And from the pitching side, Joey McManus, who's just got a really, really live arm, was lights out the other day in an outing, and Duke McCarron and some other guys. I don't want to leave other guys out, but you know, we have a good influx of talent that could definitely make an impact, which is very rare that freshmen do make impact. So I'm excited to kind of see those guys play versus live competition.
And you mentioned Chris Akopian, of course, one of the expected to be big names for this team. Just what have you seen from him? What has he brought to this team? You mentioned, you know, his maturity is beyond the years. He's great on the baseball field, just an all-around great human being on and off the field. What have been your impressions of a guy like Chris just being a freshman?
He's just special. You know, it's hard for me because him and Eddie both broke their foot in the fall on foul balls in the same week, which was odd. So I really didn't get to see a ton of at-bats. I mean, he didn't get any, really. He hurt himself before we started inter-squad. And so these last 2 or 3 weeks is the first time I've seen him compete on a day-to-day basis at the plate, and he's different. So he's kind of unknown right now, which is great for us. You know, hopefully he'll continue the success and confidence into the real games, because I'm excited for Maryland baseball fans to see this kid, because he could be one of the next greats at Maryland.
And that's certainly a good way to say it. And kind of going back to the transfer side of things, I gotta imagine, you know, of course, losing James Gladden to Tommy John surgery, but there's still a number of other strong arms that you guys have lined up for this season. Who are some of the arms who you expect to make an impact, you know, whether it's in that relieving role specifically or Friday, Saturday, Sunday starters? And has that been decided yet for this upcoming weekend?
No, I mean, we haven't decided. I think Kenny is going to start on Friday. So Kenny Lippman, a guy, is kind of a holdover. I'm excited to see what he can kind of do in more of a designated role, where maybe he had that comfort at Denison as a starter and can get back on his more of routine last year. I mean, we were just kind of, I think he led in appearances, but he started games. He closed games. He was first out of the pen. I mean, he was getting pulled in so many different directions and still had success. So he's done a great job with Jimmy working on some things, and he's definitely going to probably be our Friday guy. And I think he can maybe excel in that role because he can get more in a routine from week to week. And then we just have a ton of options. You know, Tristan Sarcone's battling a little bit of an injury right now, but should be back. He's been a weekend starter in the Ivy League for multiple years. Omar Melendez has been a starter. Mead Johnson won a JUCO title last year as a starter. You got Logan Koster, who was the Friday starter for GW last year. Logan Barrier, who was a starter at Longwood last year, but also a reliever. And then you got someone like Garrett French, so who's had a ton of innings as a reliever. So I think the first half of those guys I mentioned could all start. And even somebody like a Ryan Van Buren has taken a step up this season. So I think we have a lot of options. We just got to kind of see where they all kind of fit. And that's kind of the cool thing. The exciting part for me is I'm excited to see these guys kind of take those roles, and whoever takes advantage of those opportunities are going to get those. And then same kind of thing from the hitters. You're just looking for guys to take on that role and be super successful. And, you know, hopefully it all comes together.
And you mentioned it, trying to all come together, and obviously, you know, losing a bunch of key pieces from last season, whether it was through the draft or through the portal. And that's led to a good amount of people putting you guys as this quote unquote underdog label on the squad, despite being the Big Ten reigning champs. How do you convey to your guys to try to block out that noise? And has there kind of been an embracing of sorts of that narrative that people are counting you guys out?
I think when you're good, they don't care. So I'm actually happy to see. I try to use it as motivation, but the guys don't need it. So if they don't need it, they take care of about their business every day. They think they're good. It almost doesn't really have that much of effect. So I'm actually kind of thankful that they've kind of responded like that, where they don't care. They definitely still, some of these guys with the young talent and the guys that are back, there's a standard that's been set here. All these guys know that have been here for 2 or 3 years is regionals, right? So there's a certain standard that we've kind of got ourselves to this point that's cool to see, where I don't need a lot of motivation or bulletin board material to try to motivate them. They just kind of view that as outside noise, whether they're perceived as favorites or not favorites. And we talk a lot about being self-intrinsically motivated in day to day and what drives you. And really the games versus themselves or the games versus us. And if we play our level of baseball up to our standard, then things are going to take care of themselves.
And final one for you, you know, from what you've seen from this club this offseason, what excites you the most, or what are some of the things that excite you the most about this 2024 Maryland Terrapins squad as we get set to kick off this weekend?
I'm just excited to kind of view it from a different lens. You know, I've always been so isolated in what I want to do. Obviously, I'm watching the entire team, but I think when you're, you know, an assistant coach or whatever, you're fixated on maybe what you're working on or what your kind of routine is daily. So I'm just kind of from a, you know, taking a step back and view it from a different way. I'm just kind of excited to see how I look at the baseball game differently and just take it all in. So I'm also, I think with every season with a new team, you're also always excited to see how they come together. Good, bad, and different. Everybody has a different identity. Each team has a different identity. You have different leaders, you have different influences, and that's what makes coaching and team sports so special. It could be underdog, you could be favored and not do well, but kind of seeing how that all comes together on the field is why you do it. So I'm just excited to play other teams and finally get out and play some baseball versus some different opponents.
Well, it should be a fun weekend of baseball. The Terps will kick it off down in Georgia Southern for this weekend, the 3-game set with the Eagles. Coach, thank you so much for taking some time. I know it's a busy week ahead, but a good start to the Monday, and hopefully you guys will have a good start to the season this weekend down in Georgia.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Great stuff from Aaron and Coach Swope right there. Looking forward to this 3-game stretch in Statesboro to kick off the season. Jack, any parting words?
Excited. Again.
Excited.
it's going to be a really fun season and a really fun series. And make sure you're listening to Nate. He's very excited. By the time you're listening to this episode, Nate will probably be on a flight to Atlanta and then on a long bus ride to Statesboro, Georgia.
It's going to be...
The Masters commercial is ringing in my ear and Ben Reitman texting us, Georgia. the Master... I'm sure, spring in Georgia is awesome.
It's going to be great. I'm thrilled to be there for the season opener, the first game of this brand new version of Maryland baseball. It all kicks off on the Maryland Baseball Network at 6 p.m. with Terps Pregame Live. First pitch from Statesboro will be at 6:30. That's going to do it for us. Episode 94 of the MBN podcast. We're getting close to 100. We're going to have to do something special for that. Our first time hosting, though, I think we did a pretty good job.
I think so, sir. If there were any audio or any other difficulties like that, we'll try and get them worked out throughout the year. We're in a space that is sort of unfamiliar to both of us. So.
Right. We will figure it out as the season goes on. We will be back with episode 95 next week, where we will recap the Georgia Southern series, recap the midweek versus Mount St. Mary's, and look forward to the weekend tournament for Maryland in Corpus Christi. Until then, we'll see you next time, and go Terps!